Hi, I'm Maureen Ciaccio, your Ask a Sustainable Builder podcast host. Our guest today is Anna DeSimone. Anna is a nationally respected housing expert and lights the way for consumers to make informed decisions in buying, financing, and renovating their homes. She is the author of Housing Finance 2020 and Welcome to the Agrihood. Anna's newest book is Live in a Home That Pays You Back, a complete guide to net zero and energy efficient homes. Today, we'll dig into many options to reach financial rewards while living more sustainably. So let's get to our featured guest, Anna DeSimone. So welcome, Anna DeSimone. In your book, Live in a Home That Pays You Back, you highlight the financial benefits of homes that are highly energy efficient. Beyond the usual real estate investment and rewards of owning a home, there is potential to add to that with energy efficiency and renewable energy sources. In chapter one, you make it clear that financial benefits can be reaped along with other benefits of building sustainably. Yes, your energy efficient home will be healthier, more comfortable, use less energy, and reduce greenhouse emissions, but it will also give you financial rewards. So can you tell us a little bit about your background and about your endeavor to write the book?
Well, my career background is studying housing, racial discrimination, predatory lending, and the way people are treated when they're buying a home. And of course, it doesn't matter whether you're buying, financing, or renovating a home. I think it's so important to be able to have good resources at your fingertips. Now, everything you need to know is out there on the internet, but it's split up into a million pieces. So I have books for consumers to help make informed decisions on financing, backyard gardening, organic gardening, and of course, energy efficiency and the net zero homes.
I did look through your book and I liked your idea of doing what we can to be energy efficient, and then taking those small steps add up over time. And not everything has to be done at the same time. We need to consider the total picture, our family, life plans, preferences in living. So what might taking small steps look like if you're remodeling or if you're building your own home?
Well, I'd like to start off by saying that one of the most amazing programs, labeling and certification programs in the United States, as well as in Canada, is called the Net Zero Energy Ready Home, which means that you build a house or you retrofit your house so that it's above code. And then you take that notch up another layer by adding maximum insulation, high-performance windows, high-performance doors, and a very strong thermal envelope. But if you want to achieve that net zero rating, of course, you have to install some type of renewable energy. Well, it might not be in a home buyer's budget, or even if you're renovating, it might not be in your budget to renovate your entire house and install a renewable energy system. So the Renewable Energy Ready program is a program where the builder builds a house according to a certification that was created by the Department of Energy. And what it is an above code house that has to be built at least at a minimum to Energy Star standards. And solar energy or renewable energy requires an upgraded electrical system and specific wiring, because you're going to have an inverter that converts the direct current that is taken from the solar collectors to alternating current. So on a renewable ready house or a solar ready house, what you have is a highly energy efficient home, very energy efficient. And then 2 or 3 years down the road, you can install your solar photovoltaic panels, or you can install a wind turbine, and your renewable energy electrical setup is going to be cheaper and more seamless.
So the idea that, you know, you can do those, if you're remodeling, you can do those things in segments and even, but focus on the efficient heating and cooling, and then add the solar afterwards. So we could do little things and then a bigger thing, which would be the HVAC system, and then add the renewable energy to it afterwards, something like that?
Well, I like to start with whatever is free, because free is wonderful. And let's talk about the 100-year-old passive house design. Well, actually, it's like 400 years old. A passive house is designed to take what's free and maximize it so that your home is cooler in the summer and warmer in the winter. Now, you might not be able to change the direction that your house is facing. You might not be able to change the pitch of the roof, and it might not be that feasible for you to change the location of your windows. But with solar energy, you can have high-performance windows, double-glazed windows, triple-glazed windows, and this is going to control the radiant heat that's coming into your house in the sun so that it's not, so your home stays cooler. And with the passive house, you're just making the most out of the light that's coming through your home, but also you have maximum insulation, no air leaks, a very tight thermal envelope throughout the house. Now, you haven't written out checks for $30,000 or $40,000 for renewable energy. You haven't, installed any high-performance systems. I mean, hanging the right kind of drapes and window shades can help with that are thermal insulated. Putting retractable awnings on the outside of your house. These are the little things that you can do that will make a big difference. But when it comes to insulation, I suggest that as one of the do-it-yourself projects, you can go on Lowe's or Home Depot and look at videos on safe handling of insulation. Because, the most popular insulation used by builders in America hasn't really changed in the past 40 years, but you have to be very, very careful about handling. And then there's a long list of eco-friendly insulation types out there, like recycled blue jeans or sheep's wool. But that might cost money. But the fact is, on a weekend project, you can probably double or triple the amount of insulation in your attic and your basement. However, putting insulation in your walls, you might want to get the help of a carpenter.
Right. That sounds like that would be tricky. So when you're starting to build a new home, besides the usual thinking one must do before building, choosing a lot, a design, finding a builder, mortgage financing, all that, what would be some important considerations if you want to be energy efficient and sustainable while making financially sound decisions? So are there extra considerations then in that?
Well, the thing about sustainability is we're talking about the life cycle of a house, which is really about 60 years. And a lot of people want to know, what is the difference between a net zero house and a zero carbon house? Well, the zero carbon house has a whole different set of metrics, which we call the cradle to grave carbon metric. And the cradle to grave takes into account where the wood was sourced. Does it come from a sustainable forest? It takes into account the carbon emissions during the fabrication of the structured insulated panels. It takes into account the future and projected emissions of the appliances and the cabinetry, the floors, the exterior, the siding, the roof, because every home has a projected amount of carbon emissions over their life cycle. And the carbon metric also includes the transportation from the fabrication or manufacturing site to the building site. So when you think of zero carbon, just think about the house and not the inhabitants with it. It's always going to have that zero carbon potential, no matter who lives in it. But with a zero energy house, it's like your electrical meter working forward or in reverse. So with a zero energy, your solar panels are producing 1,000 kilowatts per month of electricity, and your house is using 1,000 kilowatts a month. Well, if you do that 12 months in a row, your home is officially designated as a zero energy home. And so when you're out shopping for a home, and a builder is building you a brand new house with a zero energy labeling program, they're talking about the projection and the potential that the house has. And of course, these projections are based on an algorithm of typical household use. And so when during the summer months, solar energy, you're going to be generating a lot more kilowatts of energy for yourself, and you're going to be set up on a two-way grid connection with your utility provider. So when your generated energy is depleted, you're going to be your system automatically switches over to get its energy from the grid. And then your next month, at the end of the billing cycle, your utility bill is going to stipulate how many kilowatt hours you generated from your system and how many kilowatt hours you bought from us. Now, the price your utility company gives you, the bonuses and the year-end incentives, whether it's a billing credit or whether or not you can have net metering, this is all the fine print stuff that is associated with having renewable energy in your house. And you'll have many choices and options, and they're also affected by state law.
Back up for a minute to what you were talking about in the beginning, because that was like an interesting concept to me. So there's the house. If you're building a house, then you can kind of calculate the carbon neutrality of the house. But then once you move into the house, then it's kind of like the game is on again.
That's right.
Yeah.
Household usage. And I mean, you can build or renovate a house so that it's a zero carbon or zero energy, and then that house has that certificate, it has that badge. And then the next person that comes along that buys your house is leaving their windows open, and they're not using the programmable Gulf thermostat, blah, blah, blah. And if, you know, at the end of the month, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, I thought I was going to have no utility bill. It doesn't really work that way.
So we need a set of instructions to go with the house.
Yeah, you need instructions for, you know, the smart home systems that are associated with some of the new high-performance technologies that we have, like,
right,
hey, Alexa, lower the thermostat, you know. And your kids start yelling out, hey, Alexa, raise the thermostat. So, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to think about when you want a smart home technology and the latest features of an energy-efficient home.
Right. So what would be the difference between if you're owning your system and if you're renting your system, and does it change then?
Well, it's all about like buying a car or leasing a car. The power purchase agreement is a wonderful way to have solar energy installed on the roof of your house with very little upfront cost. And the best part of that is that the third party provider is installing it and they're maintaining it, so you feel like you have, you know, a lot more, you know, hands-on help. And then also, you haven't made a capital improvement to your house. So if you think you're going to be relocating in 3 to 5 years, if you bought this house and you decided, well, when my kids go to high school, we're out of here because we want to be near the football field or the hockey rink, that's the American dream. That is all part of the plan called moving up. And so if you lease your solar panels, when it comes time to relocate, they just come and take them away. Now, if you're analyzing the cost benefits of buying versus renting, well, if you purchase solar panels in this year, you will get a dollar-for-dollar bottom line tax credit of 26%. And if you install them in 2023, you're going to get a 22% tax credit. So on a $15,000 system, that's like a $3,600 or $3,900 credit. So if you owe $10,000 on your taxes, now you suddenly owe almost $6,000. The other thing about owning solar panels is that you probably will be able to sell your positive energy. Now, can you imagine saying to your high school kids, you guys want to go to college? Well, start Googling how to sell our energy, and you can make several thousand dollars a year. Put that money into a college fund. And, you know, and more importantly, you have to, it's such a good idea to involve your whole family in ways to help save the planet. They want to know what's going on. Even toddlers, they like to understand how those solar panels are actually helping heat their home. And if you give your older kids chores, like, I want you to analyze this bill and see how many kilowatt hours we could have left over, what we call positive energy, if you guys start leaving the lights off, you know, maybe watching TV list. They like these challenges. But the best part about owning your solar panels is that you are able to sell your energy in the form of a solar renewable energy certificate or a renewable energy certificate. And you can also power your Tesla or your electric car. You could power your electric bike. lawnmower. You can put a charging station under a carport or in your garage. And, you know, you can involve your family in, you know, powering their bikes. And, you know, if they're mowing people's lawns, you can tell the kid, your high schooler to charge a premium because you have, you know, renewable energy involved in the powering of your lawnmower. But, you know, it just keep in mind that there's a lot of, you know, advantages to owning as well.
Is renting okay if you can't afford to own it?
Well, yeah, it's really about upfront money. Let's just say you have $40,000 to play with, and you're buying a house that needs everything renovated top to bottom. So what we call those is a deep retrofit. Now, even a 100-year-old house can be a net zero home. So once you do a deep retrofit, you're actually rebuilding the inside of the house as if it were, you know, built by an energy efficient builder in the beginning. And it would be an above code home with extra insulation. It would have a strong thermal envelope. And I think that the heart of the house and the place to start is always with the HVAC system. So if you spend your $40,000 on solar energy and you have an outdated or not effective HVAC system, it becomes the weakest link. Mm. So whether you're putting a windmill in your yard or solar panels or hydroelectric, or you have biomass fuels, you know, heaters in your house, you have to remember that the maximum benefit from any renewable energy system that you can install in your house is only going to be as good as your HVAC system. Now, I have seen HVAC systems, hot air furnaces that are only 3 or 4 years old, and they can't even touch an Energy Star heat pump or a totally efficient furnace.
So if you can afford one or the other, choose the HVAC over the solar, because you can rent the solar. And so once you've rented the solar for a while, let's say you've paid off your HVAC, you've paid off you're making progress paying off your retrofit, then you could always stop renting and buy your own solar.
That's right. Okay. Just like leasing a car, you might have a 3-year contract. The other thing too is it gives you a chance to get used to how things work. Now, you might ask, well, if I'm renting a house, can I lease the solar panels? They're called power purchase agreements. The problem is that you need to have the electricity upgraded. Now, if you are renting a home from a family member, which is not unusual, you know, you can't afford to buy it, but you're renting it for a while, or you're renting it with option to buy, because it's going to cost several thousand dollars for the components, which is the DC to AC converter and the extra wiring. And it's not just for solar panels. It's any renewable energy system. The power that is generated by the collectors, whether it's a collector of the sun's radiation or whether it's the collector of wind or water, it has to go through a converter and then invert that power to power the appliances and the electricity from your home. And so I really can't say off the top of my head what those upgrades might cost, but, you know, a few thousand dollars anyway. However, it's not going to be the kind of upgrade that you can remove from the house that easily, especially if it's wiring. But power purchase agreements are very, very good to save your upfront money to do the kind of renovations that the whole house needs. All right, so I would start with the punch list of priorities. Number one, upgrade the HVAC. And a crucially important reason to upgrade your HVAC is improved indoor air quality. Mm. You will be healthier. So the new high-performance HVAC systems today have options called a heat exchange system or an air exchange system. So what you have is strategically placed vents on different parts of the house. So right now, you probably have a home with a vent over your stove, which takes the heat from the stove and sends it outside. And that might be, you know, a health and safety law, that the reason why that fan is there. But in your bathrooms, the reason why there's a vent taking it out of your bathrooms is because water that sits on a windowsill or on a floor turns into moisture. and moisture turns into mold. And the droplets of mold find their way into the air, and this is not healthy for people to breathe. And so every home in America or anywhere in the world is subject to airborne pollutants, contaminants, and bacteria. And yes, it's good to circulate the air in your house. So when you're circulating the air in your house, say through fans, you're just moving that pollen and bacteria around. But a high-performance air conditioning system has a HEPA filter, or it might have an electronic filter. So these filters capture far more contaminants and allergens and bacteria and pollutants than the filters of 5 years ago. And so that's why you may buy a home or you may have a home with a furnace that's working fine, but it is worth upgrading for indoor air quality. And the other part, the other optional parts are humidification system so that you can have a small amount of droplets of water coming through your hot air system, because hot air is dry and it's not good for our health. And then the, you know, the gold, the platinum level of that would be to have the air exchange system, which doesn't add a lot more money, but it takes the warm, stale air out of your house and sends it outside. And then fresh air passes through a filter, which is capturing outdoor pollutants and allergens. And so your home, so your household, your family, and your pets have a continuous supply of fresh filtered air, you know, 24/7. So that indoor air quality and health and home health is one of the, I think, the most important payback, because it's immeasurable and measurable. You can't quantify it, like, you know, saving $150 on your electric bill can be quantified, but there's no price tag on a healthy home.
Right. How you feel and how it affects you for the rest of your life. Kids are constantly battling allergies these days. So curious, when you're describing the bathroom situation, is the ventilation in the kitchen and the bathroom or anywhere different on one of these kind of filtration systems where everything is, the ventilation is orchestrated in and out? Does it go somewhere different than just outside? Is it not, because I know sometimes it takes the warm air or cooler out of the house.
Yeah, well, no, every house is still going to have the bathroom vents. And of course, these are required by building codes.
Right, okay.
And now the building codes are a little bit looser on stoves, especially if you have a convection oven or have, you know, the newer technologies that are used for cooktops. There are fans are actually just recirculating the air in the house, because for fire protection, you're keeping the working air in the top of the stove cool. It's not about, you know, polluting the air. But in a heat exchange or an air exchange system, you have a couple of strategically placed vents and like tiny little fans that are working, and they're pulling the air out of your house. So just think of it as one long continuous loop. Now, the thing about airtight homes and a strong thermal envelope is that the same air is in the house all the time. It's not escaping. I mean, the Department of Energy says that across the country, the average home has a mile and a half of cracks in leaks of air. So the more we're retrofitting our homes for energy efficiency, and the more builders are building net zero or energy efficient homes, the more airtight our homes were. Now, I built an energy efficient home in Connecticut 5 years ago that had a very tight thermal envelope. And when I sold it a year ago, I only lived in it for 4 years. It was 4,000 square feet. My heating bills were so low that my buyers were in shock. And I kept it comfortable. All right, I had gas heat and I kept it comfortable. But the thing was, I was surprised when the home inspector came and they did the radon test that I flunked the radon test. So, of course, in doing the research for my book, I realized that the more airtight we make our homes, the greater the likelihood that the radon gets trapped in the house. And so what I found out is just about everywhere in North America, radon lives in the ground under our homes. So if we don't have a basement, the radon is going to creep and find its way into the foundation of your house, or it's going to come in the basement. So I actually quoted my radon mitigator in my book because he was so helpful in explaining it to me. So what he says, because there's this pressure of the air. And the radon is going to escape if we release the air pressure and send it to the outside. And so what they do is they install, so it cost me like $1,000 or $900 to do this, but they install a unit in my basement, they put pipes along the wall, and then they feed it around the back of the house. And so it almost looks like, you know, the standard 2 or 3 inch, you know, white plastic pipe that you see, you know, for escaping other toxins from your basement, like other gases, like carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide. But radon specifically, there is a small fan which drives the air out. So what it's doing is the same thing as an air exchange. It's taking air and just pulling it out on a regular basis so that it can capture the potential of radon. And this is not a bad thing because there is always a potential wherever you go, but it gets trapped inside your house when your house is airtight. And from what I researched for my book is that builders today are now across the country are now incorporating a mitigation device in the house itself. So when you're walking around and you're looking at the heat vents, the air pump systems, your HVAC system, and you're in the basement, you're going to see all kinds of pipes. And someone's going to say, well, that pipe is going to keep radon from sitting in your house. Just it's working like a smoke detector or a carbon monoxide detector.
Yeah. How did it take us this long to make that something that we all do?
Well, you know, because for centuries we've been building homes with air leaks. Well, grandma and grandpa were right. Open the air and get some fresh air in here.
Right.
Fresh air is healthy. But when you're paying 15 cents a kilowatt hour for electricity and when you're spending $100 or $150 a month for fossil fuel heat, I mean, if people today are spending $300 or $400 a month just to heat and cool their house, they can cut that price in half without even having a renewable energy component by insulation and a strong thermal energy. But it is going to mean fewer leaks and fewer drafts. And so we got to get the bad guys out because they will be there. And that's why the air cleaning systems. And if you can't afford to upgrade an HVAC system that has the air cleaning and purification component, you can always buy portable units. You know, portable units have HEPA filters and they have electronic filters, which actually zap the bad guys, you know, out of the air. And especially in babies' rooms. So if you have a child with asthma or a family member with asthma, you know, putting a humidifier or an air cleaner in their room is so important. Keep that going. Change the filter on a regular basis. But the other thing that's very important, so let's get back to the budget. Let's say you have $30,000 or $40,000 to spend. You want to put 20% of that might cover a very high performance HVAC system. Another 20% in that pie chart is going to give you double glazed or triple glazed high performance windows. That makes a huge difference. And high performance doors. And then, of course, the extra insulation, you know, in the attic and in the floors and the walls. And also, important part of energy efficiency in a house is air sealing and moisture barriers. Because energy efficiency isn't just about how many kilowatts of electricity you're using. It's a whole house blueprint that things can happen to your house that will cause your home to actually use more energy and or will make your system break down. And one of the destroyers of good systems and operating systems is water. And so you have to have flashings on the side of your house. So around the foundation of your house, you have to look and see if water is sitting there. You know, in New England, we have a lot of waterfront properties, we have shoreline properties, and you walk by these, or you ride, when I used to ride my bike by all these old houses, and I would see the mold and moss crawling up the foundations, and I'm thinking, that mold is being inhaled by the people who live in that house. But so water damages your home. It damages the integrity of your house and it damages health. And so you want if you're putting on a new roof or if you're putting on new siding, you want it to be sustainable, built from non-toxic materials that are durable, long-lasting, but most importantly, one of the most important things about an energy efficient home is that your repairs and maintenance are going to be lower. The overall measurement of an energy efficient home is a little bit like the zero carbon home. You're looking at the house as it stands now in the life cycle of that house. And you're looking for the emissions that are possibly going to come out of that house just from because of the way the house was built and the materials that were used in the construction, the manufacturing, and fabrication.
Let me take a detour because that's just a great, I have a great picture in my head of all the things, like the whole house system and, you know, what can be done and how it can be done in pieces. I'm curious about the options that are not solar. What other options are there, let's say in New England, where I am, that are not for solar?
Well, geothermal energy can reduce energy costs 65%, according to the Department of Energy. But geothermal is where energy is taking hot and cold properties from far below the Earth's core. So it could be 80 feet below the ground, it could be 12 feet, or it could be 200 feet. So what collectors and pipes are drilled into the ground, and these pipes are collecting hot properties and sending them up one pipe, and they're collecting cold properties and sending them up another pipe, which pass through a thermal heat pump. And it heats your house, it cools your house, and it also will heat your hot water if you have a thermal heat pump hot water heater. Now, geothermal is available 24/7, 365. It's free and it's safe and it never runs out because we're talking about the Earth's core. Now, there's another type of geothermal energy which has come from the bottom of lakes, which would be hydrothermal energy, but it's just too complicated to get into that in a podcast, and it's more rare. The problem with geothermal is it's not available everywhere. And there's a company that is actually headquartered in Massachusetts that I quoted in my book called Dandelion Energy. And they have some fabulous videos on their website. And they are taking homes and installing geothermal on an individual basis. But where you're going to see geothermal for the most part is going to be in the state of Texas, California, Washington, the states. And not because there's more availability of geothermal, because a lot of geothermal in upstate New York, the reason why you're going to see it advertised in homes is because there's a lot of new construction in these areas. And so it is much more cost effective for a builder to build, to buy 30 acres, build 20 houses, and then implement a geothermal system using what we call the closed loop system or the open loop system. So he will install a huge geothermal heat pump, and he will offer each household that buys one of their homes, you can have geothermal energy in your house for 8,000, 6,000, or 10,000 more. I mean, that is a bargain. And not everybody will take it because geothermal is a concept that, you know, is harder for people to understand. But the fact is, you're spreading out the cost of that geothermal system, because a lot of it is in the digging to put those collectors down underground.
Right.
So that is the second most popular, and after solar photovoltaic panels. And then, of course, there are windmills, which are mostly seen in the commercial sector.
Yeah.
But if you have enough land around your house, you have to go to the website of your local jurisdiction, your town, your county, or your state, and find out what the setback requirements are. So for health and safety reasons, you can't have a wind turbine that's only 10 feet above the ground, because kids could climb up and hurt themselves. So there has to be a height requirement and a setback, you know, on your property. And then you would be installing what we call a small scale wind turbine system. And it's amazing, you know, the oldest way of powering energy known to history is wind and water. And actually, it's fun for the whole family to get involved and learn about, you know, reducing your electrical needs. And you will be setting up the same two-way connectivity with your grid as you would the solar. As a matter of fact, you can have power, you can have solar panels and a windmill on the same house.
Wow.
Your thermal energy, your renewable energy system is just taking in the power. And if your house is only consuming and you're generating 1,500 kilowatts of energy each month, you have more than enough positive energy, what we call excess generation, to power a car, power your e-bikes, and power all of your tools, and sell renewable energy certificates on the open markets, like selling stock. And the final one, I mean, hydroelectric power means that you have to have running water, flowing water on your property.
Mm.
Great learning experience. If you have a stream or a river, you can get a guide to small residential hydroelectric systems, because I mean, if they're not the Hoover Dam. I mean, you're going to have a system that is small and scaled down to your use. And that system, that pump, is going to produce the power, which is in the form of renewable energy for your household. These are great if you're living off the grid, because the difference between the dual grid, two-way connection, and off the grid is if you're off the grid and when the sun goes down at night, you don't switch over to the utility. However, you probably have a backup system. And, you know, I don't want this to be an infomercial because I am not promoting any particular product, but there are a couple of products out there that I think are just awesome. For instance, Tesla has solar roofs. So the solar energy isn't from panels, it's from roof shingles. But Tesla also has solar panels that you actually put on your house that power a backup generator. So I want you to picture living off the grid. So you don't need a two-way connection with your utility company. And the other company that provides this is Generac. And I had a Generac generator in my last house. And I could not live without a Generac. So here's the thing. There were, I think, 1,300 power outages due to winter storms over the past 4 years across America. Mm. You never know when you're going to lose power. Yeah. So backup generators are a very important thing. So when you have positive energy, you can put a generator, and the Tesla ones actually look like solar panels because they are placed on the side of the wall, like inside your garage.
Mm.
And they hook up. So when your solar roof or your solar panels stop collecting energies and filling those photovoltaic cells with energy, your house starts to get its energy from the backup panels. Mm. And there are people that are buying more than one of these. And of course, the Generac does the same thing, but I believe, and I may be wrong, but I seem to recall when I was on the Generac website that their system hooks up to a home's solar panels. You know, technology is changing every day.
Yeah, right. And which leads me to, we do have this changing relationship toward technology. And how do you see that evolving, like with families growing up now with solar and with, you know, better energy? And I was just, and along that line, what you were talking about before, with kids is I have kids and we could not get them to turn their lights off and, you know, not take too long hot showers and, you know, all that stuff because just to save energy. But I think for kids, the idea of making money on energy, like you were saying before, somehow that flips a switch on them.
Yeah. Well, I think it gives them a project.
Yeah.
Say, so I want you to analyze these electric bills and, you know, let's make a contest out of this. How many kilowatts of electricity do you think we can save? And, you know, if you did have enough positive energy that you were able to put an electric car charging station in your house, you can have your kids have, you know, like a Saturday And they can be entrepreneurial. If your kids are entrepreneurial, would you say invite people, you know, put up a sign and say, I will power up your electric bike for $3. Come on by on Saturday from 12 to 6. I mean, see, here's the thing. What we are hearing is we're seeing bumper stickers that say save the planet. We're hearing about greenhouse gas emissions. We're hearing about global warming. But children as young as 4 years old are familiar with these words, but they don't understand how the earth is warming, how our climate is warming, and the human cause or the anthropogenic emissions are human caused greenhouse gas emissions. So, you know, you can use a reusable cup when you go into Starbucks, but you want everyone in your household to think of the next generation. Mm-hmm. Even your children need to be thinking of the next generation. I mean, the Paris Agreement, I mean, the whole thing about the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions to 0 or 1.5 or 2% below pre-industrial levels is easy for everyone to understand if they see it in a graph, in a presentation. So I think you're going to see a lot more education. Our schools are going to be saying, well, you can plant 12 trees if you hang your laundry on the line 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. You can plant 8 trees if you change all of the light bulbs in your house to LED or Energy Star light bulbs. Mm-hmm. You can plant 30 trees if you take public transportation to work. People need to be shown examples of what they can, of their actions make a difference.
They need an infographic in their head to think about.
They need it. It's not enough to say, well, I'm helping the climate control because I bring my reusable cup, you know, to get my coffee. They need to quantify it. Mm-hmm. And so when they're old enough to start doing projects and keeping track of things, which I think they can do at 10 or 11 years old, take your energy bill and break it down into the large print numbers. This is what we generated from our system, and this is what we used. And you know what the difference is? It was worth $40 a month. And I am going to put that in a little kitty for us to take a family vacation or do something if we can have that gap widen. And then all of a sudden, they do start to remember to turn off their lights.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe less TV. And instead, they're going to spend more time on their phone looking at the weather because your 12-year-old is going to say, Mom, we're going to have 6 hours of direct sunlight today. So according to my calculations, I think we're going to have between 30 and 40 kilowatt hours of power at the end of the month. And that should give us an extra $17. That is educating and preparing the next generation. And you know what? They start teaching their friends those same little tricks.
Right.
So it's quantifiable.
Yeah, I think we need that infographic and the numbers and the practice. If you get your kids to do that, it's like it's a practice. And you go around for the rest of your life saying, oh, how much energy am I using doing this? All right, so we have time for, like, what's the most common pitfall that people might fall into when they start going down this renewable energy or high efficiency home path?
Well, I think I'd like to start with, when people are buying, financing, or renovated their home, there is an enormous amount of information out there, but it's in a million pieces and it's very fragmented. So you can't make a decision about renewable energy if you're just Googling how much money can I save on solar energy.
Right.
You know, it depends where you live. I mean, it depends on so many different things. But I think the pitfall that made is that a lot of people are influenced by what is trendy, like the farmhouse style home with the rocking chair porch. And, you know, I want a farmhouse kitchen and I want an open floor plan. And I want to have the barn doors that roll across. Well, as we all know, that whether it's a mid-century modern, whether it's a log cabin, whether it's a farmhouse design, these are based on popular decorating trends. And then in the world of financing, if interest rates are very low, your friends shouldn't be suggesting that you get an adjustable rate mortgage if it's not good for you. So the biggest pitfall people take is they forget that they're the ones paying the mortgage, not their friends. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make every decision about buying, renovating, and financing a home, and decorating your home, or putting in a garden that is good for your household and you and your pets. So that is the pitfall. And I think that when it comes to energy efficient homes, you have to remember that you need to spread your budget around the entire six walls of your house. They're six-sided. You've got to spread it around, not put all the money in one place. You know, I'll give you an example. If you bought a house for $300,000 and you spent $50,000 on a pool and patio, and then 3 or 4 years later, you have to move. The appraiser or your real estate agent says, well, your house is worth $320,000, you know, but the pool, you know, because of the pool. And you say, well, wait a minute, I spent $50,000 on that pool. How come I'm not going to get it back? Well, because it's a little bit too, it's like a top-heavy situation. The money that you spend when you improve your house needs to be relative to the price of the house itself. Now, a $50,000 pool on a $2 million house is standard for a McMansion, but not on a $300,000 house. Well, it's the same with a $150,000 chef's kitchen. If you put in the chef's kitchen and then you're freezing in all of your rooms because you have single pane, cheap aluminum windows, and your basement wasn't finished and is lacking in insulation, you're going to ask, well, we can't even watch TV in the rec room because it's too cold. And I don't want to use electric heaters or fire hazards. You know, then you start getting into the argument, the pitfalls. Well, you wanted the chef's kitchen. And so it's the same with energy improvements. You got to start with the heart of the house, which is the HVAC, and work your way out to the floors, the windows. And the second priority is the insulation, a thermal envelope, which, of course, includes the double pane or triple pane windows, and strategic use of the sun. Get the right drapes and awnings and shades, and pull the shades down when it's 100 degrees out, and let the sun open up those curtains in the wintertime and let the sun come in. You're going to see a big difference in your energy bills because of that. Mm.
Right. So, and to take that a step further, so not only should you do that for making your house energy efficient, but maybe making your house energy efficient is a greater priority than the fancy kitchen, which you will be freezing cold in if you don't consider the energy efficiency first.
Well, also, you have to remember, there are so many things about living sustainability, transportation, food, travel, lifestyle. But when it comes to houses, your house is your single most important lifelong investment. And we are lucky enough in America, almost every state in America now is seeing at least a 10% a year appreciation. And in some areas, it's hitting 15%, even 20%, which means your $300,000 house is going to be worth $330,000 the next year, which basically means it's going to double in value in 10 years, but only if you take care of it and you landscape it and you fix it up. Well, studies have shown that energy improvements sell for higher prices. Wow. And they also sell faster. Mm-hmm. So when you are completing energy improvements on your house, if you have a HERS energy score, if you have an Energy Star certification, if you have a net zero type certification, a passive house, these are the badges that add value to your house. So not only will you save money while you're living in it, you are building your retirement nest egg because the wealth in your house of equity is growing at a faster rate than if you bought a non-energy efficient house. Mm.
I was just going to ask you that. If those improvements were worth proportionally more than, you know, the fancy kitchen.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, I just renovated a kitchen in my new house because I bought a house that needed a top-down renovation. And I bought a townhouse, so I had to be careful of what I put in. And as you know, as you can imagine, you can't put solar panels on most townhouses. Although state laws are changing all of that, you know, a condominium association cannot prohibit you from installing solar panels, but they can tell you where they can be placed. But mostly in a townhouse, you may not have enough square footage. You need at least 600 square footage for enough solar energy. You know, and being in Connecticut, we don't have that many hours of direct sunlight. Plus, I live alone. But when I found out I had to wait 6 months for cabinets and a lot of appliances had to wait 6 months, I am a firm believer and always going with the middle of the road. I was lucky to get a good contractor, and he had talented cabinet makers and guys who actually turned my garage into a workshop. Are they the same as we see in the expensive showrooms? No, but I want to tell you, I have the most beautiful kitchen. And I think that when you go, when you build or repair something to grade or a little bit above grade and not get caught up with, you know, the fancy tiles or the, you know, the $10,000 refrigerators. And I have to say this. When I built the energy efficient home 5 years ago, I had a washer dryer. So exactly 5 years later, I bought the exact same washer and dryer for my new house, which had an Energy Star label. I guess I didn't notice it the first time. Maybe it did. Technology has changed so much. I could not believe the difference in my washer and dryer between now and 5 years ago with the same brand. Yeah. And also my appliances, my stove is amazing. And the Energy Star appliances, including my refrigerator, are incredible. So it's not just saving the kilowatts of electricity each month. They're quieter and they're more durable. And I don't think you're going to see the Maytag repair guy just like the commercial. I think it's going to be years before you pick up the phone and call the appliance repair guy with the way they're building our appliances today.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So thank you, Anna, so much for being on this podcast and sharing your amazing, detailed knowledge of all of this, you know, guiding us through how to make the most of our money and even educate our children along the way and make our peace with the new technology. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
I hope this episode helped you understand how to get a better return on your home investment through energy savings. Thank you, Anna, for your insight and wisdom. If listeners want to find detailed options for funding and using renewable energy or building a highly energy efficient and healthy home, her book, Live in a Home That Pays You Back, is a big help in understanding terminology, issues, options, and financial programs. Please take a minute to leave a review of this podcast on your favorite podcasting app and share the podcast on social media so more people can learn how we build more sustainably. You can also find this podcast and more information at AskTheSustainableBuilder.com. Mm-hmm.